bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
As ever.
Hello, welcome for the big show. It's the big show because it's big. There's no other reason. I don't know why. It's all the week's tech news, everything that's happened, everything that's gone on, everything that should have happened and hasn't, and general hypothetical conversations about the world of tech. Joining me, the great panel. Ian's all squished on that view. I'll have to change that. Top left, we've got Mr. James Hart. How are you doing, sir? Back from sabbatical.
My goodness, it's been a busy week. I think I've got over the worst of it for the time being.
Have you been working nights?
Yeah, I've been doing on-call stuff and some overnight work on AIX servers, patching AIX. It's really cool. It's fun.
The way you were tweeting, it's like you got a job down the mine, mate, and pulled a night shift.
Well, I did, yes. I was up 2:30 this morning as well. So, yeah, I just, you know. But the great thing about it is because it's all just command line stuff, you can do it. Just get your laptop out, do it anywhere. Do it in front of the... So Beth's been watching Christmas films, because that's what she does this time of year. Aww. And there is a channel which is entirely dedicated to cheesy Christmas movies. And I'm working, so... Yeah, we all.
What's the channel called?
I think it's called the Christmas Channel, but I don't know for sure because she TiVos it all and just watches them back to back. It's
watching. It's not a problem. Recording it, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, she tells me that the brake bumpers are a little bit like, you know, when you were reading and you listen to an audio cassette of a book. So, you know, turn the page, you ding. But on these films, it means there's an ad break coming up, so fast forward through it on the TiVo, which I think is quite funny.
Very good. So you can fast forward.
Yes, like the only other thing, I've got a bit of a gripe.
Oh, go on.
I've got LED lights for my studio. It must be 3 or 4 years ago, and one of them has gone already. And I'm absolutely livid about that because I had fluorescent. I had the normal incandescents in before, you know, those dichroic bulbs. Had them in for 4 years, and none of them went.
What's the brand of the one that burnt out?
Cheap off eBay, Brad. What do you say, cheap off eBay? But I mean, 4 years ago, they were really expensive. They were about a tenner a shot. So I'm going to have to. But you could probably replace them for a lot less now. So that'll be all right.
So not light panels, in other words.
No. These are those little down lighter things. I'll show you if I can.
Here we go. He's showing us.
One of these sort of things. 5-watt. Downlight things.
Well, don't bother putting it back if it's broken anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I know what you mean.
They're really bright, but yes, but not when they don't work
not
anymore.
Not right now.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for your sympathy.
Yeah, you got it, mate. next to him, making a welcome return, Mr. Ian Grant from New Abode, it would seem.
It is indeed a New Abode, sir.
You've got a sideboard. You're Leo Laporte.
What, with the wood of the background?
Sideboard and background, all you need is a digital clock, mate, and you're there.
I know, but there is a clock somewhere behind me, I think, but there we go, I'm not sure.
How you been, pal?
Bookcase with books on.
Good, man.
Oh, and I've got a postcard here, actually. It's quite funny, someone sent me.
A postcard?
I'm going to turn it off and back on again, thing if the camera can catch it.
It will if you hold it still.
Back on again. Hang on, so we'll get it on the camera.
You need to hold it still, mate.
That'll be a job.
Oh, right. So we'll have to. That's the first time we've ever had to edit the video, not the audio. Thanks, mate.
It's only arse. Oh, that's all right.
It's only arse. There we go. I can do audio as well then. Beneath him, it's Sarah Jane. How you doing,
Hello.
Mrs.?
I'm very well, thank you. I was just thinking, you must be a geek when listening to James's conversation. And the one thing that kept jumping out to me was not about the Christmas movies, but what version of AIX are you using, James?
God.
To be honest with you, I don't know. I think it's 6.5 or something. I'll tell you as soon as I'll get on the system and I'll tell you.
Mighty-o, jolly good. And last but by no means least, drinking tea.
Coffee,
okay. Eric Lanigan, how you doing, mate?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. It's not too bad at all. You're looking kind of squished today, I have to say. Are you? Have you been screwing with your video? It's
not at all.
You're a bit wide-eyed.
I haven't done a thing.
Oh, okay. There we go. Fair enough. It is what it is.
It's all your fault.
Maybe this is the first time we've had the natural view of Eric. Maybe his head.
Oh, am I just sitting lower or something? How's this?
Maybe his head really is square. Who knew?
That's not how I remember it.
No, it does look a bit squished, but never mind. The week in tech, what's been happening? Well, it turns out that whilst looking for the Higgs boson particle, the Large Hadron Collider may have found some new matter. It's called coloured glass condensate, which is bugger all use for anything in my life, I think, apart from being a tongue twister when you've had too much to drink. We've also got the 25th annual Street Fighter World Championships happening on the 8th of December. Do you remember Street Fighter? Eric, you wouldn't be born, I don't think, born by that point. But
I played Street Fighter 2 on Genesis.
Right. Street Fighter was awesome. I remember playing that with a girlfriend who had a 9-year-old brother. I did it to try and impress her.
Oh, you didn't have Genesis, you can imagine how good.
You had Sega Master System or something.
No, it was on, wasn't it on Nintendo?
Yes, it was a Nintendo game.
Nintendo
game. Well, either way, you guys didn't have a Sega Genesis. You had a different name for yours, didn't you?
I think we had Sega Genesis. We had Sega Mega Drive, and then we had, I think Sega Genesis came afterwards. But anyway, there you go. Street Fighter.
That people are still playing that?
People are still playing it and still having a world championship at it.
Excellent.
Nay.
That's sad.
The people at People Browser are very upset, and they've won an injunction to stop Twitter from crimping the amount of data that they get to use on their API, which I thought was amazing. If you've been keeping up with this story, this is a firm that have done, they've built a business effectively on the back of the Twitter API. There's only a few of them there in the Motley Crue picture that I'm showing on the video, but they've won an injunction to stop Twitter from crimping the API, which I wouldn't have thought they could do, but they've done it. Well done. People in the tech city in London, if you want to have your internet connection, some of them are being quoted a year to wait for internet connection, which is meaning that it's not particularly tech. And finally, if you stay in hotels, which I do a lot, I've just been talking to Ian about the fact that I've now got gold or elite concierge status at the Park Inn in Heathrow. There's a hack, apparently, for hotel door keys. It doesn't say in the story what the hack is, but if it is...
it's hardware.
I keep a load of photographic equipment in my room with the Do Not Disturb sign on, so come steal it.
Apparently he's been able to fit inside a marker pen.
What, my camera equipment?
No, the actual little device. Someone actually managed to squeeze it inside the marker pen.
It's gone one step beyond the that there was that rumoured... default lock for the hotel locker thing. If you forget what the code
is, like quadruple zero. Yeah,
all have the same code. Yeah, but that's pretty frightening. But to be honest with you, when you're reliant on technology to be able to protect your property, that's somebody and it is rolled out to such a huge. I mean, if you imagine these hotels are all using practically the same brand of lock on their doors, somebody's going to be able to pick it, aren't they? It's the modern equivalent of a copper with his credit card.
A copper with his credit card.
Yeah, he used to get into Yale locks with the credit card. You know that old.
Why are you saying
that? Smith, you mean?
No, my dad used to be when my dad was worried about somebody who'd collapsed when he was a copper. He used to get into people's houses to with a credit card.
Oh yes, I saw it on the telly, but I never thought it was actually possible.
Yeah, it's possible to do because really credit thin. Cards. Yeah.
They break.
A bit of plastic.
They probably should.
That was always the joke about the British police years ago was I need 20 fags. Really? Why don't you wait till the shops close? The rest of you can laugh in time with that.
But saying that, I do remember one incident where we had to use a locksmith, and he did have something that was similar, but it was much harder plastic.
Okay.
So the concept works, but I think that you'll find that a credit card's probably too thin these days to do that with.
The only thing you've got to make sure that you don't do is leave the bit with your signature on in the door if it snaps.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's a few people have been caught by that. So the week in tech, really, I mean, the sensible stories that we've had, first of all, is Windows 8. I mean, Balmer's had an interview which he said an awful lot. I think probably most of tonight's conversation is going to be centred around what Balmer said. It's not like him talking to headlines, is it? Barmer has said that Windows is now selling in phones four times higher than it was last year. There's also been the Asus chief financial officer has been saying that demand on Windows 8 is pretty low, but there's lots of suggestions that Windows 8 is gaining fairly good traction. They're saying it's outselling Windows 7 quite significantly. And also there's a supposedly new OS coming out for Windows 7, which is 7.8, which at 7.8, you've got to say in your mind, why the hell don't you just call it 8 and be done with it and unify the two?
Well, there's a reason for that.
Oh, go on then, Ian.
Well, the reason is 7.8 is like the last hurrah for Windows Phone 7. It's the tweaked up all as much of the new stuff that goes in Windows Phone 8 is in 7.8.
And remember, just as a Windows way of, 7 of giving phone cannot upgrade to
the early adopters
phone.
Who bought the earlier handsets some to give them maybe another year out of their handset before they rush off and buy themselves a new Nokia or one of the other many phones that are appearing on the market.
Eric, you were going to say?
And buy an iPhone.
Yeah, I was saying that also. Remember that Windows 7 phones cannot be upgraded to Windows Phone 8.
No, they can't. Most of the current handsets on the market
that was always the way with Microsoft, wasn't it? Microsoft had this way of making it so. Yeah, unlike Apple, where you could probably take the operating system several versions, not quite enough, but several versions up. Microsoft, if you had a Windows 6 phone, you couldn't run Windows 7, and no. Never the twain shall meet. Which of course isolates people. You know, you can't do anything new with your phone once you bought it. You're frozen out already.
But the irony of that.
Android now.
You've got to say, though, the irony of that is you look at the legacy on iOS, and yes, it's pretty good. It's two or three iterations. But you look at the legacy on Windows 6.5, I mean, that runs on virtually anything.
And still running now. I mean, we've
exactly.
got guys who come from Mountain. All those kind of EPOS systems, you see, your courier company, you have to sign on the dotted line on that little hand, on the little tough terminal they give you. That's 6.5 or 6.
Yeah.
Wince, as it was known, was Windows CE. I think it's compact edition, maybe. It's still going strong out there on the handheld ruggedized portable market.
Now, I mean, one of the main fixtures that's come up this week is Asus CFO saying that Windows 8 demand is pretty low, yet Barmer said that sales of Windows 8 are higher than Windows 7 at the moment. And there was a question in my mind of whether is Windows 8 really struggling? Or is it because Windows 7 was so good? A lot of people said Windows 7 was great after the horror that was Vista. And I looked at it from my own viewpoint about why would I upgrade? I've got Windows 7 running in a VM on my Mac just to run some industrial software that I've got from a firm. And I'm kind of like, well, I want to try it because I want to do it for this so that I can say I've used it and I know what it feels like. And there's a bit of me worried about the fact of whether the software is going to run if I upgrade, because if I do, I've got to roll back then, and that's going to be a real pain in the ass. And also, we're talking £50 for me to get an upgrade, which is still a hefty sum. I mean, is Windows 8 shooting itself in the foot, or is it genuinely a worthwhile upgrade?
The back end is a worthwhile upgrade. The actual, when you get behind the new start screen and all of that malarkey, the underlying OS has definitely been improved. It's more stable, more streamlined. Memory optimization is better. All those things are great. But unless you've got a touchscreen device to drive the start screen or you install one of these hacks that turns it off, it's going to be a kludgy thing. You'll be sitting there. There's the link I put in the chat room about Noobs versus Windows. No one seems to be able to figure out, well, I've got into my own. How do I get out again? Well, I'm in internet. How do I turn it off?
And shutdown is particularly difficult.
And shutdown's hidden away. To the nth degree, that there's you need to know a million keyboard shortcuts, which is fantastic on one for people like us. Brilliant.
I love that this many years into Windows, Microsoft still can't crack the shutdown button. They just don't know where to put it. First it was in start, now it's they don't know where to put this thing.
It was interesting in that shot that Ewan just put up. There was, I don't know if you noticed, but there was actually a shutdown tile on the screen, which is the first time I've actually seen that on a Windows 8. If you look in the bottom,
I've only just got that myself, yeah.
Now, that's a recent thing. I don't know whether that's because it obviously is a customized desktop.
It's a shortcut.
But I wonder if that is a standard one or something that someone has put in there.
And yet, look at the icon. They clearly took the Windows XP era shutdown icon and just put a blue square behind it to take up that much extra space. And that's one of the things that I hate the most about this this interface formerly known as Metro. I mean, look at the screenshot you're showing. Look at the visual chaos. Look at the unnecessary visual clutter. And then you see other tiles like the one that shows it's Thursday the 18th that is the unnecessarily large and wasted space.
You haven't seen anything yet, mate. Wait till you see the next one that I found. The I.O. button, which is in and off, and which is German for on and off, is pretty standard. So I'm not surprised to see that repeated anyway. But this is one that I found, and this is getting back to the desktop. The customization process here, of you've got the solid blocks of eight, and I've sat and looked at this and thought to myself, should I make the leap? Should I get it? Should I upgrade? £49. Well, it's not the end of the world. No. Yeah, okay, I'll get it. And then I've been ready to press the trigger on it this evening, to be honest. And I found this screenshot, and that's like, what the hell? You know, you've got all that nice Metro stuff on the left that you're like, okay, you know, well done, Microsoft. You've come up with something that's different, something that looks nice. You've tried. You've really tried. And then you've got all this crap up the right that just makes it look like it's the desktop again. And that's
they're your administrative tools. You can turn those on to administer your device, and you can turn them off again.
The point is, though, that I'm the layman looking at whether I want to buy Windows 8 or not. There's complaints about the little demand for it. And I look at a screenshot like that that's freely available on Google Images, and it doesn't make me want to buy it. Sale lost.
So an interesting question here, because I can see your point, and looking at the two different size tiles, would it make any difference if the size of the tiles were uniform, Ewan?
Oh, blimey, that's a good question.
It would a little bit to me. I think I think the difference in size, especially width, like how you get the big, the wide rectangles and the tall rectangles and the squares, and I think that's been a mistake. That's always a mistake. I think that goes back even to the ribbon. I don't like how the ribbon interface does that too, since Office I think icons should be a uniform size. But also look at the clutter between there. I mean, if you go back to that other screenshot that had all the legacy icons in the gray background, look at the clutter that they've added. They've added the visual clutter of that grid, whereas previously, and a gradient that starts freshly at each square, whereas before you would have just had all those icons against the solid backdrop of either a color or a desktop picture or in a gray menu like the start menu. And they've taken the start menu, which was at least very dense, you know, as many criticisms as you have, it was a dense and efficient way to display many icons in a row or a list. And they exploded it like this, and it to the detriment of usability and clutter.
Well, can I just add a couple of things right now, if I may?
Go ahead.
Because back towards the beginning of the week, I thought, do you know what? I've got a pick for the big show, and it's been completely ruined now.
Oh, go on.
My pick is Windows 8, and I absolutely quite like it. Here's the icons in square formation on my little netbook there. And it works really well. I've got a little Twitter client. I've got Audio Boo for it. Google Chrome, which pops up into a full screen browser. I think it's quite neat. And I like the fact that you've got these applications on this front. You press the Windows key and you get this front page where it's like using your mobile phone. And actually, I've had enough. I think that's what it is. I've had enough of scrolling my mouse around to a tiny little icon on the screen, double-clicking it. I want to press a button to be able to do something, and I'm really enjoying the experience. First off, if I want to switch very quickly to something, it's Windows key, click straight to whatever it is. I mean, look, I pressed the Windows key there, and it went straight to the weather map. I think that's really pretty.
It is. No, it looks really nice. I'll give you that.
But then you get things like when you want to try and quit out of an application, where's the quit?
Oh, that's easy.
You press Windows key, but it's still there. It's still running in the background.
No, you don't. You scroll to the left and you get your little list of, I can't do it from here, look. You scroll to the top left-hand corner and you get your list of applications that are running. Look, there you go, look. Just like on the Mac or whatever. It's a new paradigm that people are going to have to get used to.
Mm.
Well, people are going to have to get used to it. Damn it! No, it's a new paradigm for people to get used to. It's, and I don't think people should be afraid of inventing a new way of interfacing with the machine. Just because they're not used to it doesn't mean it's not good. Basically,
so it's the same basic idea as when Windows 95 first came out.
Hmm. Oh, we remember what was it called? The Program Manager, wasn't it, or something?
Yes, Program Manager back from 3.11.
God.
In the words of Jacob, in the words of Jacob Nielsen, interface guru, I say low interface. Shoot, now I went off it.
You're talking about
low information density. That's what I say. I say low information density. If you look at the screen that you showed, like you had like a weather or something up there a second ago, you know, it's a lot of this full screen of a solid color or a gradient or a photo. And at the bottom, there is like four little quotes of the stock market or the weather or something. And then you get these whole pages of icons where you have, you know, vastly less information density than you would a few years ago. And I think it's not about simplicity. Is not about reducing the amount that's shown to you at any given time. It's about organizing what's shown to you in a way that is predictable and understandable. And I feel like they failed in that regard.
Well, I would contest that very quickly. Very sorry, if you don't mind. Okay. Very quickly, that is absolutely true. Which is why I truly love Android's widgets. Android's widgets are fantastic. I've got a little widget that sits on the left-hand side of my scroll left, and I can see what the weather's going to be like, what the travel is going to be like on my home. It is an icon which is active and informative. Windows gets a little bit of the way there, but I reckon this is a staging. This is a step towards Windows Blue, which is the next evolution of what Windows is going
to
be like. And I think adventurous first step to it. Yes, it's not particularly, it's a bit clunky, but the fact is it's only £25, so it's around about the same kind of price as an Mac OS.
You're talking about Windows 8 here available where at £25?
Windows.microsoft.com/en-gb/windows/buy. Download Pro for $24.99 ERP. That's how much it cost me.
So why is it costing me?
Because if you get it off on CD, it costs more. And if you get it off Amazon, it costs more.
Yeah, but
yes, download it for £24, £25.
I'll keep that.
In the US, it's $40 for the download and $70 for the DVD. That's a big difference. And they say that they're going to raise the price in January, but I wouldn't be surprised if they continue and just keep this low price going forward because of lack of demand.
Yeah, I think
was just also going to say the reason why I think Windows 8 is outselling Windows 7 is because it's sensible to put the latest version of an operating system on a PC, and it probably comes shipped with it these days. Which, of course, is only going to confuse people, isn't it?
Comments in the chat room. Let's give them a voice for a second. I only paid £25, says Maxess. Apolio says, incidentally, Fresh Paint MOS for Windows is absolutely lovely. I don't believe that MS Paint's good for anything apart from binning. I'll come back to Paul. The comments are, is it intuitive, though? Does it work? Is it functional? Paul says, what does Mr. Grant think, or Miss Gray think, of the enterprise market in terms of Windows 8? Paul Ums is saying that he's also got the most common request he gets from users is to roll back to Windows 7.
It's interesting what Mark Deck says. Mark Deck has got some very strong views in the chat room. He's saying, if you know CS or computer science programming, Windows 8 is the antithesis of usability, which is very, very strong.
I think it actually is very low on usability because, or rather on intuitiveness. It's not intuitive for two reasons. Intuitive can mean two things. One is that it resembles the old way of doing things. So you could say that Windows 7 is intuitive relative to Windows Vista and Windows 95, etc., because it just works the same way. You're already trained in it. You already expect how it works because you've been trained in it. It's not literally intuitive, but when you say intuitive, it means you already know how it works because you've trained and learned it. And in that case, the live tiles are definitely not intuitive. But the second way they're not intuitive is they run counter to what you expect. So for instance, because we're used to the web, because we're used to clickable buttons and turning pages in real life and working with physical matter and the way our hands work with objects in real life, you expect that when you see a label or something or a block of text, that it might be a label or something to click on, when in fact it isn't, or vice versa. You may think something looks like a label, but it turns out it was actually an important button or a hyperlink that it wanted you to click. And because they didn't underline it or call it out or put a shadow behind it or these other little interface gestures or indicators, people overlook it. They don't realize that it's actually something that you're supposed to interact with, and vice versa. They think there is and there isn't. So I would say it's not intuitive at all.
Paulum's adding, for a number of my users, they're saying that it's such a big jump that they want to go OS. They might as well go to OS 10 if they need to learn something completely new.
Or Linux.
That is a great point.
Wow. OS 10 in the Enterprise is a pain in the backside. It's a pain in my big, fat, hairy, whatever. But we've got a couple of new machines, and it's not completely and utter bobbins, but it is very, very annoying to do stuff that shouldn't be now.
You're saying OS 10's annoying?
Well, oh, no, OS 10's annoying in terms of trying to make it talk to Microsoft stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm.
If you've got a Microsoft infrastructure and you want to plug a couple of iMacs in, as we did.
Mark says, what about Windows Blue? We're coming to Blue in a minute, mate.
It doesn't work and you have to close your mouse about.
If I was the manager of a giant enterprise that had a lot of medium and low-level users that had to be trained extensively to use the basic computer functions and had to be retrained on Windows, at this point, looking at the future of Windows and thinking about upgrading, I would jettison all Windows purchases at the yearly annual price that they have to pay with support and everything, and I would rewrite all my critical software in the browser using, you know, the way that the Chrome apps work in that model, because you're guaranteed that Google will give you a free operating system, and it, really anyone will, because you can get a browser on any operating system in the world, and it's fast and it's free. If you have to rewrite everything to work with Windows 8, you may as well just rewrite it right in the browser, or write in some generic, future-proof system that's going to cost you less in the long run.
I totally agree with you, Eric, but it's not straightforward as that, because it's not just about actually everything in-house. In the enterprise side, it's about working with suppliers and, you know, God, some of them are actually really tough enough to actually even get to support IE7, God forbid. Never mind, you know, staying up to date with the latest versions of browsers and stuff like that. You have to work with the lowest common denominator. And I know it's crap, but that's just the way it is.
I think the one thing that really strikes me as being counterintuitive, I was going to say ludicrous, but that's a bit harsh, is an OS is a washing line that everything else hangs off, or it's a washing pole that the line hangs off. And if you think of it in those terms, you know, would you pay more for a washing line than you would for a piece of clothing that you would hang on it? And the programs have the real intense work and functionality placed in them, and they're running at between £20 and £40, even if you buy them at CD versions, and yet your OS is running at £80, £90, £100 for a fresh install. And that just seems counterintuitive to me. It doesn't seem... I mean, you look at what it provides. We've got Paul Kirkle in the chat room, who's a great friend of the network, and he's drawn this in MS Paint. He's an artist anyway. But I'm sure that wasn't... I'm going to say it's a quick sketch, but I don't know how long it's taken him, but Paul's very talented. I wouldn't have thought it took him that long to bring that together. And he says that works very, very well in MS Paint. But if you look at most of the applications that you've actually got within the Windows OS, going back to Windows 95 and beyond, most of them you'd rather uninstall them because they're pointless. They just take up space on your hard drive. You want something that just holds a program together, allows the program to run, that utilizes the cores in the processors, nothing more than that. Mm. And Windows have been over-specking their OS for a lot of years now. No?
I think we figured it out. They should just throw out Office, throw out Bing, throw out Windows, and be a company that sells Microsoft Paint.
No.
Well, you say that. There's an interesting point you raise, actually, Ewan, because I don't know if a huge amount of software is being written on any platform at all to take account of the amazing advances that are coming into the process. You know, you've got some processors that have 8 cores now, and you've got software which is still running 32-bit versions of the program. You know, it's not even using half of the cores of any given partition, so it's crazy, really.
But you look at what Ian detailed as being the major reasons for upgrade to Windows 8 at the start of the show, and a lot of those, I'm looking at Windows 7 going, well, for what I use it for, 7 does all of those. And I've already got 7.
I would say that Windows 8 is Windows 7 Plus. It's at the back end, here is Windows 7. It is exactly the same as Windows 7, except if when you press the Windows key, instead of getting an irritating start menu, you get another screen. That's all. That's the only difference. And they've just got to work on this bit. And the reason they've got this bit is because they want to integrate it with touchscreens. So I've said it before, I believe it's one step towards an attempt at merging two different technologies. Apple have done it with OS X and iOS to an extent with Mountain Lion. So it's only sensible that Microsoft should tend towards the same direction.
Yeah, it's about, especially with the tech, the different platforms that you've actually got using it, whether it's the phone, the tablet, the laptop, even the desktop. It's Microsoft's way of, okay, right, we'll start to pull this together. And maybe when we get to Windows 9, then it'll actually start to be some nice new features and stuff like that. And I think that explains why you've still got a lot of the legacy way of doing things within the Windows 8 operating system.
God, I mean, hang on a second. How can you release an OS at a new version number at 8 on the basis that it's a progression to 9?
It's called marketing.
No, I think that definitely isn't marketing.
To the idea of this new start.
Sorry, I meant it's marketing driving technology rather than technology being allowed to catch up at the pace that it needs to.
To be fair to Microsoft, I don't think that anyone there, at least the engineers, the smart people, really did expect that the desktop users and the users of regular and budget laptops would be upgrading to this like they did with Windows 7. I don't really feel like they're marketing it that way. I think you have to look at Microsoft's history, right? Their 1.0 versions are historically bad. And by 3.0, they're market dominant. So I think of this as Metro 1.0. It may as well be a developer preview is how I look at it.
Yes.
And that's why I tell everybody, just wait for Windows 9, because don't put in the time to learn this now, because you know they're going to change it around big time. You know it's going to change by next year, if not, or by 2 years, if not 1 year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, in fairness, if you've got if you think about Windows 98, Windows Millennium, and to some extent Windows Vista, those were exactly the same idea. There you've got a supposed progression. Where somebody in Microsoft, because they're, you know, they've got to generate revenue and stuff like that. We need to get a product out because we have another operating system product out for a few years. So we need to get something out. Where are we now with the development? Oh, let's just bung that out now, and because we need to generate some revenue. And
a couple of points come off of that. Sorry, Sarah.
I was just going to finish. You know, you've got XP, you've got Windows 7, which were decent, solid operating systems. Those were the end results of certain ways of doing things. But all the bits in between were just, they should never have ever been released.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not to say that this shouldn't have been released. What this does is this is, it's interesting what Eric was saying, that it wasn't marketed to, I can't quite articulate what he was saying because my brain's gone. But my point was that I think they are trying to get people off XP. People aren't buying people didn't want to spend £80 on Windows 7 for an XP laptop that didn't really need it. But for £25 and you get this shiny new thing. I mean, this netbook used to run XP, and I put Windows 8 on it, and it's running swift as a nut. It's quick. It does exactly what it used to do with a Windows XP, but with this with shiny new functionality, and it's all right. I like it.
So I haven't even thought to look into that.
Shiny.
Can you upgrade from XP to 8 at the lowest price?
Yes, you can. Yep.
Well, that's good.
That's pretty impressive, yeah.
The other thing, of course, was moving on, is this whole Windows Blue thing where Microsoft are intending to release a new version of the operating system year.
We'll come to that in 1 second. I just want to read out Mark Deck's point, because most of all, he's agreeing with me. And of course, if you agree with me, I'll read your point out. The main purpose of an OS is to allow you to, 1, run applications, and 2, provide support for peripherals, monitors, web, cam, mouse, printer.
What about app stores? What about video editing? None of these things matter?
Well, if you look at the Windows App Store is now at 20,000 apps for Windows 8, which is a significant leap forward. So running of apps, but it's still apps, isn't it? An app store is running of apps.
No, I'm just making the point that what we call an operating system, even for the last 10 years, really is not technically an operating system. It's a suite of applications that are made by the operating system manufacturer, and we just consider them bundled and to be part of it.
Yeah, Mark's talking about Windows 255 anyway.
No,
255.
255 is before you were born. Mm-hmm. The my point would be that I keep coming back to this washing line analogy. You know, an OS should be nothing more than something which starts the hardware and allows other things to function on it.
It should be nothing more than a command line.
No. It should be a GUI. I agree with that. But the point is that if you look at everything that's provided, and I'll wrap OS X in this as well, the standard bundled applications that come with OS X are pretty much of absolutely sweet FA use. They are not good. They don't look nice. They don't function well. And you'd be better off getting third-party applications to put in their place. The calculator's crap. Finder's bloody awful. Pathfinder's significantly better. iCal is just, I hate it with a vengeance. I want to set it on fire and put it out by peeing on it. It's that bad. I find the address book completely unmanageable. And why the hell iCal, the address book, and mail aren't in a single application drives me senselessly mad. They're pointless. You'd be far better off with something else that does the job far better. And I want my OS to do nothing more than start the frigging machine. There you go.
Hold down the shift key.
And not just start it, but also manage the applications that are running on it.
Yeah, okay. Manage the memory, manage the hardware.
Well, once it's up, you want it to be out of the way and your applications to be the forefront. That's what you want, per sound of things.
Yeah. But I think in most cases it is.
I thought that was funny. Hold down the shift key and you start without extension, so it only loads your operating system, nothing else. No, you're right, Ewan. They've totally let the core applications of OS X stagnate. That's one of my biggest criticisms of Apple, is they go all in on iOS, and they have been ever since, and they really have let OS X stagnate. And unfortunately, you know, Microsoft and others have let them get away with that because they haven't had anything that really was way better, like in the, like you said, the calculator department, the little things that matter when you add them all up. So hopefully they'll turn their attention back to that.
Yeah. Okay. And now Windows Blue. James, talk us through Windows Blue. What is Windows Blue? It's not a porn filter.
No, unfortunately not, or the opposite. It's Microsoft's attempt to basically do what Apple have been doing with their iOS, what Android have been doing with their version of the operating system. They've taken on, I believe they've gone through, I mean, part of this whole restructuring that's taken place over the last few months was to be able to get them into a position where they could be a little bit more agile about the way they release operating systems. If you consider the distance between XP and Windows 7 was huge, and Windows 98 to XP, you know, the iterations have to be more quick. They just simply to take account of the different changes in technology and the way people use their machines. So I think if it works, it's a great idea. If it doesn't work, it's just going to confuse the hell out of people.
Well, the
mainly because it's the PCs they're using at work.
The essence is good, but one of the things that they're saying here on the article that's on Tech Radar is the SDK is not going to allow developers to submit applications for Blue only. So this is the separation that you've got between Apple and from iOS to OS X, is that you can submit an iOS-only application. This is saying that you would have to submit a Blue application and an 8 application. You wouldn't be able to have one that was 8 only.
But it's also saying that Windows Blue OS could just be a code name for annual updates, a cheap annual updates of Windows, kind of like how Apple's been doing.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The what they're saying here is that this is not a separation of iOS versus OS X. You would always, you couldn't submit an application which was OS X only. It would have to be OS X and iOS would be the analogy. So Windows Blue is not iOS in that sense then. It still has to have the core operational functionality of Windows 8 at its heart.
Right. Well, it's just WinRT, I think, is what they're saying. It has to run on the interface formerly known as Metro, and it has to work equally well on ARM as well as on the Metro the Metro that runs on Intel chips.
But is that not a negative step, though? That's a retroactive step because of the fact what you're saying is if RT is a... dumbing down is not the right word, but it's a dumber OS. Everything that you write for Windows 8, you have to be able to run on RT, and you have to dumb it down processor wise to run.
Yeah, but it's about making sure you cover as many bases as possible. Bear in mind that Windows 8 is meant to be the convergence from a Microsoft operating system point of view of all the different platforms. They want to make sure they can support as many as possible.
Right. I think demanding that you write once, run anywhere ultimately makes sense. Yeah. At least for their strategy, as long as we already know that they intend to have a single... I'm
running one application that I've got on my Windows 8 machine that's under the desk here, and it's running a Core i7, 8 cores firing off all at once, and I've got to make that same application, a video editing application, to fit it into your home field here, Eric, run on RT. No chance.
The way you do that, Ewan, is you make it scalable so that it adapts to the hardware that it's actually running on.
But the scalability of something like a video editing application isn't going to work because...
Okay, wait, I see the problem here. Microsoft's idiotic naming conventions has already screwed up our conversation here, because when I said WinRT, I meant the Windows runtime, not the product, not the operating system known as Windows RT. Okay. I don't know why they call it Windows RT.
That's Windows 8 RT, isn't it? Windows 8 RT, yeah. Isn't
yes.
it? Yeah.
It's what's
yeah, so
running the, on the surface.
Windows, the Windows 8 runtime does work on Intel and ARM and can include the desktop. For instance, the desktop versions of Microsoft Office that run on ARM, I believe, are considered to be written in Windows RT. So if you do that, then you can run on any version. It's not Metro, but it is WinRT.
Well, I would say in defense of anybody attempting to do that, the biggest challenge that people writing Android applications have is to be able to provide their software for something Android. What the hell is it? If you go from 1.6, I think we said it before, up to 4.2 as it is now, you've got and the different screen sizes and resolutions and the way that delivers their display, it's almost impossible to write a video. How the hell would you write a video editing app for Android? It's almost impossible to do. So I don't underestimate the amount of challenge it's going to be for them. And I think they're the ones, they are taking it on. They're going head on it.
Well, my question would be, as a consumer, I'm looking at the separation between the two product lines that I'm being asked to purchase here. Windows Blue is my cheaper OS that's annually updated. Windows 8 is my formal OS that comes in my pro version, etc. So there has to be a separation between those two in terms of what it gives me as a consumer functionality-wise. But the story that's here is saying that whatever you write for Windows Blue has to also run on Windows 8. Well, that's going to be a given because the cheap OS and the more expensive OS. But what they're also saying is you have to write, if you write for Windows 8, you can't write for Windows 8 exclusively. It's got to fit the cheap OS. And the cheap OS could be run on any number of machines, right down to Core i3 or even worse, way down, back to Intel Core. So
I don't think we're talking about a cheap version of Windows and an expensive version of Windows. I think Blue is just the code name for the annual updates of cheaper versions of Windows, which Windows 8 is the beginning of. But I agree, you're right. Yeah, I mean, you can't expect a video editing application to... you can't expect write once, run anywhere to work with something like a video application for both a cell phone and a 32-inch desktop monitor with three screens.
Step back from the technology, though, here, Eric. Step back from that technical explanation that you've just started to try and give me. I'm talking about, I am the guy, I've got credit card in hand, I walk into a store, what do I buy? And if you're telling me the way that I'm reading the story at the moment, Blue is the low-cost OS annually upgraded, it's never going to be Windows 8.
No,
it is 8. This is a diff. This is the no. It's not 8. This is the
9.
Well, I'm even more confused now. This is the point. What am I buying? I'm stood there with my credit card in my hand. I'm looking at some guy in Currys who I don't trust before I even go in the shop because of John Browett. And what do I buy? What do I need?
No. Look, here, the sources also note that Blue is only a code name for the shift to yearly updates and that Microsoft will likely stick with the Windows 8 as the official name.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lighter version of the OS, but what I'm reading, the Verge article, it's
a lighter version of the OS, that's what I think.
The OS intended for netbooks and stuff.
There we go. But the story's also saying that I can't write for Windows 8 exclusively. I've got to write for Windows 8 and be able to run it on the lighter OS, which instantly says, so I've got to make it fit my lower processors as well as my bigger processors. Well, if you're talking about video editing, I want it on my bigger processors.
No. I don't think it's a scaled-down thing.
So they'll work with one CPU as they work with four.
I think you're misreading this. I think what you need to look at is what is allowed in the Microsoft App Store. For that, they've already answered that. This goes back like almost up to a year now, I think, is that they had the requirements. And I think it's that in order to have a program that is a program that sells on the Metro style interface, it has to run on both ARM and x86. And I think that's all this is saying, but I'm going to stop because I could be wrong.
Well, no, there's the point. Your last statement is exactly the point. I'm going to stop wrong? Because I could be wrong. We are all sitting talking about something, and it doesn't stop us most weeks, I know, that we know nothing about. We've been given a story that shows us that there's going to be a separation in the OSs, or there's going to be an upgrade path, which is different.
No, we're not. I was being a little bit too polite. I think you're misreading it. I don't think this is going to be a bifurcation of the OS. It already is. It's the Intel version, which runs legacy apps, and the ARM-only version, which runs only Windows RT apps. I think that's all this is saying.
But my point is, you cannot write for the 8 version alone. You can't go for something that is probably going to run on the higher capacity machine alone. You've got to take in the other devices as well, according to the press release. That is where it's hobbled straight away. And if it's not, we're sitting debating something that we can't fathom.
By press release, you mean unsubstantiated rumor?
Say again, Sarah.
Let's just wait and see. As you say, there's not enough data to know exactly what Microsoft are going on.
That's exactly my point, Sarah. I am the consumer. I sit and read the tech feeds. I'm a person who is willing to buy the Windows OS. I'm sitting here tonight thinking about pulling the trigger on it. And nothing that I've heard so far in the debate that we've had for the last 45 minutes has made me click buy. Apart from James says it's great. It's not bad. Oh, sorry.
To be honest, I at 25 quid, I'd take a punt anyway.
Oh, rich girl. Rich girl.
You wouldn't?
25 quid, I'll probably buy it. Okay.
Because exactly.
At 49 quid, I was going shove that up
the Sunday shine. It's an upgrade from XP. I think it's not bad value for money.
Oh, it's great if it upgrades from XP as well as 7. I've got
that
7.
That's awesome, yeah.
My only problem is going to be that I'm thinking I've got a couple of pieces of software that I do need it to run on, and if it's 7 to 8, it doesn't work, then
So buy it, stick it on another piece of hardware, put the software on there, see if it works. If not...
But I also know backwards compatibility is better on Windows 8 than it is on OS 10.
Yes, well, Apple have that thing traditionally of breaking the ties, don't they?
Absolutely. Let's not mention Logic 8 around Will Green.
Although he was singing the praises Adobe thingy, wasn't he, the other day?
Aperture was
given
a going over, wasn't
it? Oh, no, Aperture kicking, aye.
Incidentally, for those of you that know me, I didn't mean that in a negative way. I actually think that's a good thing that Apple do.
Yep.
Sometimes you have to break those ties.
Good debate.
Very quickly, if you don't mind, I love the question that iCyberPaul asked in the chat room. He said, so should I go out and learn to develop for Windows? And the question is, what the hell should one be learning to develop for?
HTML5. Android,
Windows, HTML5.
Yeah. Eric alluded to earlier.
The web.
HTML5, absolutely.
Then you've got everything.
Well, you say that. The web. What about Xcode?
Well, yeah, but it's still got to divide up onto different platforms and doesn't necessarily mean it's going to support everything. The great thing about writing software for a browser is that all platforms have browsers. End of. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, but I think if you look at things like iOS, iOS is definitely not web browser oriented for its applications.
If you're a kid playing around with programming or you want to get into it, I would say first, before you do anything, learn HTML5 because it runs everywhere and can do anything and will only get better in the future. You may not be able to do everything with it, you can't write a video editing app with it quite yet, but in the future, I think we will. And next, learn JavaScript and then the iOS stuff, because that's a lot of JavaScript anyway, and the Xcode environment there, because that's a big profitable platform. And then after that, you can start to branch out into how can I port that stuff to the new Windows RT platform, which again is mostly JavaScript and HTML5 for the lightweight applications, and then also to Android and etc.
Where's the cha-ching? Forget about what spread of platforms. Where's the cha-ching?
Where's the money?
Where's the buck for the your investment to the
iOS.
Return?
iOS.
There you go. Thank you.
The cha-ching, Ewan, in actually developing on HTML5 is that you've got as many bases covered in terms of people that can use it. So you've got a bigger market marketplace.
Oh, I don't disagree that you've got a bigger marketplace. It's whether you can get that market into your place. And the place is iOS. If you want to start, if you want to learn something, it's Xcode at this moment in time.
No, you want to make money?
Cha-ching is Xcode.
Mm. Yeah, if you want to make money. Whoever would have thought 10 years ago that we'd be saying that Apple is the company with the dominant monopolistic platform that has way more software than Microsoft's platform? Way more.
Well, I think Eric and I agree that HTML5 is the way to go.
No, am I right, Eric? No one's disagreeing with you, Sarah or Eric. What I'm saying is, where's the cha-ching? Where's the register is open right now and you're putting your cash in it? It's not in HTML5 because the outlet is too limited. There's no app store for it in that sense.
Right. Look
it's a view for the future. I might not disagree with that. There will be an opportunity for you for the future. Like, but your money return instantly is going to come from iOS.
If you look at it like this, for HTML5, you can run on everything. If you develop in Xcode, so you can then cross compile into iOS and Android as well. That still means you can't run on the desktop.
No, what I meant is, where's the cha-ching? It's in the app stores. If you write HTML5, you can, with some work, and possibly a slower app than you could natively. I remember Mark Zuckerberg recently said that they had to rewrite their Facebook app from HTML5 and iOS to native iOS. But of course, they can do that. They can afford the resources. And if for a company like that, every couple of milliseconds of load time matters. But they can do that. But if you're just starting out and you want to make a cha-ching and you want to make a buck and you want to start a new service or program or platform or something, HTML5 can be bundled into the web, iOS, Android, Windows 8, etc.
I am not disagreeing with you in the slightest about potential and
longevity as well.
Ease of access and potential for breadth of market, Eric. What I'm saying is, if you want to spend 5 hours programming, which is going to give you the return on that 5 hours? I'm a photographer. I go out, I shoot pictures. I go and shoot pictures for people that pay me. I don't go out and shoot pictures that are artistically fantastic and might sell in the future.
To be honest, Ewan, my comment on this is a quite... I haven't completely finished the thought process, but the fact is, the reason HTML5 isn't marketable is because there isn't a marketplace, there isn't a walled garden of places where you go to buy it, just like you have the Android App Store and you have the iOS thing. The second thing is, there is no innate application protection of it to stop you from being able to run it anywhere. And therefore, you've got to think of a different way of making money. For example, if you develop an HTML5 application that uses a database backend which has the premium material you want on it, you can charge them a subscription for getting their premium information. So it's another kind of business model. So you can still develop for HTML5. But the other benefit, of course, is that the fact that HTML5 is innately portable and you don't necessarily need an online connection even to run it.
The question from Paul in the chat room is similar to Flash, really.
It's similar. It's very similar to developing for Flash.
And
you can't make money out of Flash.
And DT in the chat room says, why don't we just write in Flash?
There we go.
And speaking of Flash, how Adobe has said, you win, Apple, you win. We're killing Flash and we're going to make tools to write in HTML5. I could be wrong, but I think that they also make tools now that allow you to write in HTML5 and then compile the apps into the native code of the respective platform.
Batwench in the chat room saying that if there's more apps in HTML5, wouldn't that make the market grow? I don't think it necessarily would, because as James says, you need a store, you need an outlet for that, and that necessarily isn't apparent.
The other thing I was going to say is, you don't actually develop in HTML5. You use ASP or PHP or something else that actually renders HTML5.
Mm. And Ewan, you keep saying that the answer, that where's the cha-ching, and you keep saying it's not HTML5. Where do you say the cha-ching is?
Xcode, at the moment. If you write an application in Xcode and get it into the store, it makes money for you. It makes money for you passively.
You're only looking at one market, Ewan.
No. I'm saying the biggest. Exactly. My point is, if I take, I can take an image tomorrow and I can sell it to a stock image warehouse and sit it there, and I may make £20,000 off that image over a period of 10 years. Or I can take a picture for a company that wants to pay me to make that image today, and I can make 500 quid from it. Thank you very much. I'll take the 500 quid every time. I want the money that's here and now. I don't want the money in 10 years' time. I don't see long-term investment that way.
Well, 10 years time. What I was saying at least was, you know, if you're starting out in programming and what's going to be the 10 years in the future, I think HTML5 is only going to get better. But yeah,
I haven't disagreed with you once during that whole debate that the longevity view may be HTML5. But if you're talking about what's going to put food on the table for your kids tomorrow night, it ain't HTML5. It's iOS. And right. That's the end of it. That's okay. Exactly it. I wasn't saying that's the end of it, as in my word's final. That's not what I meant, but you know what I mean.
No, in the short term, present term, I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. I think long term, I think you're both right, but that isn't going to feed my kids tomorrow night. That's my point.
Is it a debate if no one disagrees?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because
I disagree.
We've all talked. You disagree?
But just for a laugh, really.
Oh, good lad. Okay, fine. I just want to cover.
I actually disagree anyway, but then I'm just
in general.
Well, I tell you what, we'll get someone to write an application for me in Xcode, Sarah. You write an application in HTML5, and we'll see who's made the most money at the end of next month.
I'm not interested in the end of next month. I'm looking into next year and beyond.
Well,
that's the way I work.
Those of us that don't work for corporations that pay us on a salary basis are looking at the end of next month, trust me.
And I will write an application in DOS and see which makes the most money in 1989.
And trust me, based on the fact that I've got a couple of companies at the moment whose payroll systems are crap and I haven't been paid, I'm currently owed £32,000 and it's biting hard. It's biting hard.
Okay.
Oh, quick prediction. Just say a year. When do you think it's, you know how everything retro eventually becomes cool again, right? So everyone who grew up with Atari and 8-bit video games, now that's cool. That's the hot new aesthetic is the 1970s and 80s graphic aesthetic. So what year do you think it'll be when the hipsters of that time will be skinning whatever operating system they have, be it Windows or Mac OS or whatever's around then, to resemble Windows 95 and WinRT?
It's 20 years, mate.
Yeah.
That cycle is always 20 years. It's always been 20 years. If you look at the release of 1960s songs, the re-release, Jackie Wilson, Reek Petit, was out in the 1980s because it was 20 years. That cycle is always 20 years. It's always been 20 years. It always will be 20 years. That's all you got to do.
You know what it probably is? It's probably a nostalgia that kicks in for your childhood right when you reach that period of adulthood where it's like, oh crap, I'm not a kid anymore. I've got to make big decisions and do big things. And why can't I just watch Transformers and play with G.I. Joes?
You know why? It's not to do with the fact that you're nostalgic. It's to do with the fact you've got money when you're 30.
That too. A market opens up for cash.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to touch before we go on to the adverts and finish off on Windows 7, because Windows gone to Windows 7.8. It's due out early part of 2013. Now, Ian, you're the man who's most recently used a Windows 7 phone. You absolutely loved it when you had it, but you've gone to Android now, you say, but 7 to 7.8, is there much of a change going to be there, or is this the death throes of 7?
It's a last hurrah for 7. It's the idea they want to get a little bit more out of the OS for those that have still got them. It's going to have a lot of the features and a lot of the look, I think, of 8, of the Windows Phone 8 that's now coming out with the new Nokias.
Well, 7 looked like 8 to start with. The Metro-esque interface was always wasn't it?
It's the evolution of that interface.
It worked.
They found some way to make the tiles more sizable. They found a way of making it. You can get, I know you say it's a busy interface, everyone, but the idea is you can get more on your screen, you can see more. That's the whole thing behind the 8, and also a few more bits of functionality at the back end. I've lost a little bit of touch now. I've moved on to the old Android thing, but that's generally what they're aiming at. As a little interesting side, you know the thing about the sales with the phones at the moment? They're saying they're selling 4 times as many Windows phones as they were last year, and all this sort of thing. My girlfriend does market research, your mystery shopping. And she, one of the companies that they keep asking her to go out to do sort of things to try and see what the phone companies say is Nokia and their handsets. For both 7 and the new 8 ones now, she's doing a few surveys for them. And she has a hell of a time gently coaxing and prodding them to actually get them to get with the program kind of thing and actually mention Nokia. It's almost like an afterthought after they've been through the latest HTC, the latest Samsung, the iPhone, and everything else. So not even the phone shops are really pushing them. So I don't know where these numbers are coming from. I think maybe they sold 1 last year now, maybe they sold 4 this year. And so it's a sales increase.
Well, Balmer said they're selling four times more than last year, which is an irrelevant statistic based on the fact you don't know how much they sold last year.
No,
they,
exactly.
They've not published any statistics about the Windows Phone share. But, I mean, you've got to presume that they're selling a fair quantity to make it worthwhile to continue development. Therefore, four times greater is good.
That new Nokia phone sucks.
they're advertising it to hell, though. I don't know if everyone's watched the TV lately, but every other advert seems to be Nokia. The new Nokia is.
Somehow they managed to make a phone that is like 17% thicker and 25% heavier than the average phone on the market today. Sign me up.
It's quite a nice looking handset, but I still don't want one.
Yeah, no.
It's Sarah's fault. She talked me into getting an Android phone. She was right. It's a good phone.
You loved 7 when I went and had dinner with you that time, the Rither Arms.
I did. I still think it's a good OS, but when they said I weren't going to release any more updates to my handset, that's when it finally went, no, to hell with that now. I can't.
There's no longevity here, yeah.
There's no longevity here. I need something I can keep for a while. So I've got effectively the same handset now, but it's the only difference is it runs Android. If I could have hacked that one to run Android, I probably would have done it, but there was no one developing a ROM for it. So I've moved on now. I've got a Galaxy S2. It was an excellent handset.
Apparently, Nokia is still very popular in Africa, says Batwench.
Yeah, well, that's you know which ones are popular, don't they? The old candy bars that you and I all had many years ago.
That's the ones that 3310, mate.
Yes, exactly. All of that kind of thing.
Good phone. Weak charge.
Super phone.
God, I remember that.
And what was the business one, the tall one, the tall candy bar one? The 63, yeah, not the 33, but the 6310. That was a super fan. My mum's.
I had the one that was in the Matrix. 70, was it 7510?
Yes.
310, something like that. That was good.
Yeah, they were cool.
Those were Sony Ericssons.
No,
that was a Nokia.
Nokias.
The one in Matrix was definitely a Nokia. The handheld thing and snap.
Got one of them upstairs somewhere. Doesn't the show always end up with one of these bits where someone goes, oh, I got one of those old things?
Doesn't this show always end up with us showing our
7110 it was.
Exactly.
It was the Matrix mobile phone.
7110, that's the one.
I'll see if I can find it.
No, don't. I'm resisting the temptation, James.
All right. We'll both resist the temptation.
You know, Sarah.
The thing is, in 5 years' time, we'll go, do you remember the iPhone 3G? I've got one of them somewhere.
Sarah's got like a Star Trek, one of the not the teleport thing, what do you call them that used to make Star things?
Trek. Communicator, phaser, tricorder.
No, the things that used to go teal, grey, hot. You know what's they call them? The replicators. She's got one of those replicators. She sits there and she goes, Nokia 7110. and there's one in front of her just pops out. And she goes, this
Sinclair,
is one
C5.
I have.
No,
exactly.
I haven't got that, you and I've got the more modern equivalent. I've got the 3D printer. So you press it, I type it in, it knocks one out.
It pops.
Bit melty, but look.
If you have transporters and you have replicators, why can't you just clone your best captains and like have them pilot every starship?
Because there's no starships, Eric. You know, it's fiction, right?
Aw.
Sorry if I burst the bubble there, dude, but...
Yeah.
This podcast and all of the others on the network, all the drivel that we pronounce each week is brought to you by UK2. If you're having trouble with your email, they've got a bit of a fault with one of the email servers, apparently. So if you're struggling to email and log into your email, then stick with them. They're fixing it now. I think they should be fixed any moment if it's Thursday night. If you're listening on the Catch Up podcast, there's nothing wrong, nothing whatsoever. But UK2 are fabulous. They get the odd glitch. Everyone gets the odd glitch. But the difference is with UK2 customer services, you raise that ticket and you mark it as critical. My website's gone down. Something's gone wrong. I'm not getting my email. My e-commerce site's not working. They'll get onto it very, very quickly. Typically, we've had responses to critical support tickets within an hour. And usually when the ticket comes back, it's, okay, it's solved now. It's fixed, sorted. I can't fault UK2 customer services. I don't know many people that can. We certainly don't get any comments from people on email that say that UK2 customer services are bad. They're great. They're really good. And they support this network, which is why you should support them, because they've absorbed an immense amount of bandwidth. We've gone back to normal now. We're about to have 50 terabytes again. But They really were great. During that whole iOS 6 thing, we ended up with, at worst, 127 terabytes went out last month. But they picked up the bandwidth. They didn't give us a charge at all for it, and it was all fine and dandy. 450 quid a month worth of bandwidth they're picking up on our behalf. Please, 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 if you want anything for the web, domain names, UPS, VPN, UPS is a server, VPS is what I meant to say, not UPS because they're a courier, then go to UK2 because they are absolutely fine and dandy and brilliant and wonderful. And if you click on the sponsors link, use the click through there and then use the offer codes that were on the sponsors page, you get tons of money off as well. Fabulous. Can't beat them. UK2, support them because they support British tech. Thank you.
Why would it even matter that Spock died or Kirk died or anyone? You can just replicate a new one, right? You can just clone an infinite number of them using their DNA signatures that are already stored in the transporters, and it can already replicate it molecule for molecule, everything from food to equipment to people on the transporter pad. Just make a new one and put one on every starship in the galaxy, and you've got the best fleet that there is.
I believe there's the whole of the Starfleet, the backstory is that there was a massive war and stuff, and they came out with the code of behavior where you know nobody smoked anymore, everybody behaved respectfully to each other. It is almost like a utopian existence, and they probably have a thing that says, "I will not replicate myself because it would really piss everybody off."
I think you'll find that actually the transporter is a little bit like move on Finder. If you hold command down and you move the thing across, it will move it across, and providing it all goes over there, then there's no problem and it'll actually move. But if you put copy across, you'll end up with two versions of it, and two versions wouldn't do. So because of that causation issue, they had to do one. And it's like the old Finder move would be, which was you'd start it moving across, and if it cocked up halfway across, you lost both.
It's like Schrodinger Spock.
Yeah, it's all it is what you'll find is the transporter is effectively Finder from 2 years ago. And when they sort it out, it'll be Finder like now, but that'll be 3100, not 26, whatever it is. Moving on.
Oh, we've all learned something here.
I don't know. It's all crap, isn't it? It's good fun crap, though. Right, have we got any cool things? James well, T. Hart.
I would say yes, James. Beam me up, Mr. Scott. Look at that. I'm running the chat room on Windows 8. How cool is that?
Really?
Actually, it's really bloody clunky. Yeah, it's an IRC chat client. It's a little bit clunky because I couldn't find out how to close it, but you have to basically wave your finger around the place and right-click in various different places, and eventually a little menu bar comes up. You're absolutely right. It's not particularly intuitive, and you've got to kind of guess what they were thinking to work out what you need to do. But yeah, I can go onto the British Net Network chat room on it, and if I can do that, surely I can do anything in Windows 8.
So are you saying your pick's decidedly okay?
because it's, well, we've just discussed it, and I think the middle ground is it's okay. I have, however, a do not go near this thing if you can possibly avoid it, and it is the Nokia C31 mobile phone. You see, I used to like those candy bar phones. They were quick, they were snappy, you know, you could type text messages. There were people who could write text messages at a rapid pace. But this thing is the most unusable candy bar phone I have ever had the misfortune to ever have to use. I was on call last night and I took this phone home with me, and it hasn't got the most important feature, which is an up and down arrow so I can scroll through text messages. You've got to swipe the screen. And it's every step of anything you want to do on it, it is impossible to do. I want to be able to delete a selection of messages. Because, you know, basically, I get text messages every time I get a sort of call through. I want to go, da-da-da-da, delete. No, I've got to either delete one at a time, which takes ages, or I've got... And it's just like, oh, my goodness me, they haven't thought this through at all. And it's not an old phone by any means.
It's an ugly phone.
You would have thought that the basic keyboard shortcut for a swipe would have been arrow keys, wouldn't you?
But yeah. There isn't
it's pretty
one.
Basic.
But they, yeah, so if you can avoid, do, just please avoid the Nokia C3.
Well, being good Nokia phone that it is, there's no arrow keys.
That's what it was squares for, though. That was always up and down.
But there isn't even that.
It brings back shuddering memories of the Nokia that I had that was like a gold block. Like Terry's All Gold. Yeah.
Is it a 3390?
It might have been. It was horrible. There we go. I'm still shivering. Excellent. Have you picked, or is that just a pass?
So yes, my pick was Windows 8. My pass is the Nokia C31.
Jolly good. Mr. Grant, what have you got for us? Pass and pick.
I've got no passes, but two picks. Oh. One's an Android one, but it's available everywhere else. Endomondo is yet another fitness app. I think last time I came on, I was chunching about I was starting me couch to 5K.
Right.
Well, I completed it now.
Good luck.
Hey.
I'm running 5K three times a week.
Good.
And I've gone down lost 10 kilos.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm now 34 waist, and I've been one this century. So
it's all good
stuff. But I'm playing around with an app called Endomondo, which is a tracking one. So I'll see how far you've been, little maps and stuff. It's absolutely brilliant. And there's the free one's really good. There's also a paid version, which I'm waiting for it to come down. I'm gouging price a bit because I usually discount it every so often. And that's got other things like people can actually message you while you're running, and they actually send you sort of like sort of G up messages and things. And there's also a lot more you can link into other sort of monitoring apps, the polar bands and all this kind of stuff, the heart rate monitors and all that kind of good stuff. So that looks really interesting. So that's well worth a play. Endomondo, there's a free one in the App Store, in the Android App Store, probably on everything you can ever think of, to be fair.
Good little
app. And the other one's something that's a bit more geeky called Thing, F-I-N-G. It's available on iOS and it's available on Android too.
Love that piece of software.
It's network monitoring. Little bit of network monitoring app. I was a bit concerned at work. There was weird and wonderful things going over our wireless. So fired it up on my iPad and connected that to it just to see what was going on, and got an instant picture of everything that was there. Super little thing. I've got it set on my phone, and I can also sort of check. You can check anywhere you are to see which else is sharing your connection on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no, I've got a Thing. It's very, very good.
Super little app.
Sarah, do you have anything for us?
No, I don't, I'm afraid.
No, another one. You're getting as bad as Lanigan.
No, I've got a good one today.
Ah, he's putting you to shame.
Put it to shame, mate. I'm excited about this one because I realized before the show when I was thinking of what I can pick, I realized this would make a great stocking stuffer for the geek in your life. Not necessarily the geek, but the Monty Python fan. And I do know that there is significant overlap in those communities. My pick is the Blu-ray special edition of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I just rented it the other day, and I finally got around to seeing what's on the disc. And one of the best Blu-ray transfers from an old movie I've ever seen. It is so clear and sharp. The soundtrack is so clear. You can toggle between that and the original mono track, and it's like you can barely understand them in the old track. And the same with the old DVD. I don't know what they did to the sound, but you can actually hear them. It's like it was recorded yesterday. Similarly with the video. You're watching this. I mean, you know this was shot on a shoestring budget in the early 70s. And it looks like you're watching a 70mm IMAX movie that was shot yesterday.
Hang on, mate. You know that it was shot in 35mm originally.
Yeah,
which is significantly higher resolution than 1080p.
No, I said 70mm IMAX.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is the original movie was shot on 35mm. So the 35mm will instantly, when scanned, go to far higher resolutions than 1080p.
Oh, yes, you're right, Ewan. All Blu-ray transfers are created equal. You're totally right. They all look the same.
Right. If you go get yourself a Blu-ray Cary Grant movie, go and buy yourself North by Northwest on 1080p Blu-ray, and you will see a pristine movie. And the reason is because they kept the 35mm film in pristine condition.
They all do that. Come on. It all has to do, it's the film stock, it's the quality of the film, it's the grain in the film, it's the loving care with which they color corrected it. I mean, you look at the shadow detail, you look at the sharp detail that you just could never see before. And it's stunning. And here's the last big thing, that this is why you have to get it for the fan. This is why you have to stocking stuffer. It's got like 10 minutes or something of never before seen footage by anybody. They went back to the original camera negative and found deleted scenes and outtakes and bloopers that no one's ever seen, including animation, if you're a fan of the animation. So for all those reasons, that's why I give it three thumbs up.
Alex is saying he reckons it was shot on 70mm.
No.
I reckon it was shot on 35 myself, but then...
I'm sure...
I'll bow to Alex's knowledge.
I'm sure it was 35, but we know there are many different qualities of 35 millimeter. And then even after that, there are very different qualities of 35 millimeter scanning and transfer.
Alex is definitely 70. Alex is definitely 70. And Ian has jumped in with the Zulu transcribe as well, which I know was shot on 70.
They didn't shoot that in 70, no way.
Apparently so. Alex knows.
See, I don't think I've ever seen a decent reproduction of any of the Monty Pythons. They've always looked really crappy, haven't they? I think that's the point.
No, they've probably done some of them.
The comparison for Zulu I've logged in the chat room, because when you see what the improvement is for the Blu-ray, it's amazing, the colours and the depth of the picture and everything. Just looks awesome.
Would it have been in inches? No, it wouldn't. Definitely not. Says DT. There we go. Anyway.
Why you guys got to ruin my pick? I had this great pick and you're all Blu-rays look the same. You know, what are you talking about? VHS tape.
Providing the original film stock is of good quality. Alex said he was shot in, Alex just put in the chat room, it was shot in 3 feet.
It was shot on red, I believe.
My pick... Ellis is good with his dancing. He goes to a dance club on a Friday night, and they do loads of different styles of dance. And he's a little mover, I have to say. And we were talking this week about him doing a little solo thing. He wants to do like a solo at the next show that they do. And he said, "I don't know what to do." And he was coming out with a whole pile of modern stuff. And I said, "Why don't you do Weapon of Choice, Fatboy Slim?" And
classic.
He went, "What's that then?" I said, "Well, okay, this was probably in the charts about the time you were born or just before." But I went on YouTube and I got down the original official version of Weapon of Choice for him with Christopher Walken doing the music, doing the dance steps. And I knew it was good because I said to him, "You got to do Weapon of Choice because it's just brilliant." And he said, "Show it me." So I showed it him. And Weapon of Choice was such a good video back in the day that it infused a 9-year-old to go, "I got to do that." And it's Walken. Drew, who's one of the followers on Twitter, said, "Classic, Walken after midnight." And it is exactly that. It is the coolest video you'll ever see with the coolest soundtrack. And my pick of the week is definitely, my cool thing is definitely the video for Weapon of Choice. Not Weapon of Choice as a track, the video of Weapon of Choice. Perfect. There you go. If you disagree, what do you know? Eric, you want to come back on that? No? I reckon that was shot in 35mm as well.
I thought you were going to say that.
I found a comparison. I've lobbed a link in for it. It does look really nice.
What, for Weapon of Choice?
No.
For Life of Brian. Stuff Life of Brian, Jesus.
Actually, I've got to mention, because you gave me such a hard time about the Holy Grail transfer. Life of Brian was one of the first Blu-rays I rented when I got a Blu-ray player. I was not at all impressed. I was like, it has coarse grain. It has no special features. I ended up deleting it off after I already ripped it on my hard drive illegally. I didn't delete it. I'm like, I don't need to save this.
The special DVD's features fine. For Life of Brian, mate, were the interviews between John Cleese and the Church of England afterwards that were on Parkinson and that kind of stuff, mate. You got to Google those. Go through YouTube and look at those. They are fantastic.
They are. No, I've seen it, and they are. But they were in the standard DVD too, so I already had that. Oh, okay. I ripped that long ago.
Stuff that then. You're not coming on here again.
Now Eric, with Blu-ray picks.
Eric, say Monty Python.
Monty Python.
Nearly.
It's a U, mate. It's not an O. It's a U.
If you've ever listened to what Missy and Carl do, you'll know that it's Monty Python.
If you're missing Missy and Carl off our network, that's because they've started out on their own. They've got the Here and There show. So go and Google that or iTunes Here and There if you want to listen to Missy and Carl. Well worth it. Right, where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
I think I'm going to hibernate now, but when I pop up, I'll be popping up on Twitter as Syzygy, SYZYGY.
Thank you, sir. And Ian, where are you, sir?
I'm at Turn It Off and Back On Again on Twitter, which is at TIOABOA. I should be there. You'll probably see me running.
Excellent.
Because that's usually what goes at the endomo posts go there.
Sarah?
You can get me on Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
And Mr. Lanigan, finally.
ericlanigan.com, twitter.com/ericlanigan, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N. Now with high-def Blu-ray transfer.
Film aficionado.
And I'm Ewan Rankin. Millimeter man for nothing.
You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And we'll see you all next week. We've got Photo Show tomorrow, and we've got Max Show tomorrow. Don McAllister's back after his sojourn down to Australia. And he'll be the right way up this time. Have a great week.
Very good.
See you next week. Australia, mate.
All right.